that everybody in this country has a right to a decent way of life, a decent place to live, a decent hope for the future. That is when America will make a difference and history will move forward. And that is part and parcel of the responsibility of the women's movement. The women's movement has become an indestructible part of American life. It is the homemaker deciding that raising children, cleaning and cooking, and all the other things she does for her family is work that should be accorded respect and value. It is the young woman student asserting that she wants to play baseball, carry a torch, major in physics, or become a brain surgeon. It is the working woman demanding that she get the same pay and promotion opportunities as a man. It is a divorced woman fighting for Social Security benefits in her own right. It is the widow embarking on a new career. It is the mother organizing a daycare center. It is the battered wife seeking help. It is the woman running for public office. It's the woman on welfare looking for a decent part of American society. And one of our commissioners, her native wit belongs to all of us, and as a matter of fact, is one of our national treasures. She served as press secretary to First Lady Bird Johnson, is an author, lecturer, and we know her the most and love her the most because she is also co-chair of ERA America. Here she is, Liz Carpenter.
The nation are on Texas today, and I assure you we like it that way. This year, something quite wonderful happened. Every woman living under an American flag had a chance to attend a meeting, vote her mind, and send a delegation here to this National Summit of Women. So here we are, the faces and voices ignored and silenced too often by the decision makers. But the presidents of the United States and the Congress have asked us to assess our needs, assert our worth, and set our goals for filling the legislative gap. I thought they'd never ask. Unafraid, uninhibited, let us speak to the future well-being and the happiness of America. And let the message go forth. Until the women of the United States are full, equal operating citizens, the cry for human rights around this globe will have a very hollow ring. Who are we, you out there, we the people gathered in Houston? We are the female people left out in Philadelphia. And the irony, the real irony, is that there would have been no America without us. So we are here. We are here to stake our claim on its past and its future. And we have been necessary from the beginning. It took a woman, Queen Isabella, to have the faith to send Columbus to discover America in the first place. She heard his pleas and she put up the cash. We crossed the Atlantic to Boston and Jamestown, and again, it took a woman to remember to bring along a printing press. We weren't included in Philadelphia to write the founding documents, but we printed them. And the only name of a woman on the American Constitution is Mary Catherine Goddard, Baltimore printer. And as America moved westward, it was a woman, Sacagawea, the Indian maid who led Lewis and Clark to the Pacific. And can't you see her now? Look, pale faces, big water, Pacific. So, across the open plains, we trudged every weary foot of the way, and we embraced the majesty of the American Rockies. We wrote about it, and we sang songs about it. and we helped build log cabins and light the lanterns of the frontier. It was a lonely land and an empty land, and we peopled it. Yes, we made the people, and sometimes we overdid that. Once settled, we've seen our own dreams sometimes shattered, often shortchanged, doors closed or half closed by insecure men and women fearful of a world of equality. Are we so dangerous? Are we so alien to this land we've founded? Are we so threatening, so forward, so brash, so pushy to ask for fairness? Are we to be forever shackled by the unending audacity of elected men? We mothered this nation. Are we going to be penalized for it forever? We have no intention of abandoning our role as nurturer of our wife or mother or responsible sisters or loving daughters and tax-paying citizens. Some of us are homemakers, some breadwinners. Most women are both. I've spent most of my life being both, and I've enjoyed both. And I know the warmth of a baby's laughter, and as a journalist, I know the satisfaction of a newspaper byline. And I know... I know that panic and that loneliness of widowhood, as many of the women in this room do or will, my friends. We cannot all be as passionate as Bella, or as perceptive and photogenic as Glory Steinem, or as judicious as Judge Shirley Hufstedler, or as futuristic as Betty Friedan, as impish as Amy, as mellow as Miss Lillian, as caring as Rosalind, as dedicated as Lady Bird, as gentle as Pat Nixon, or as courageous as Betty Ford. So America, look at us, listen to us, have faith in us, help us, and love us as we have loved you.
So we are very honored indeed to introduce Lady Bird Johnson, a lady who speaks for all of us. Thank you very, very much.
Back when she was an outstanding student in Phyllis Wheatley High School here in Houston, back when her debate team at Texas Southern University tied with Harvard, and she graduated magna cum laude, Texas watched with growing interest when she made her first races for the Texas legislature in the early 60s and lost. Later, we cheered when she ran for the state senate in 1966 and won. By the time she claimed her seat in the United States Congress in 1972, we knew, and the nation itself began to sense, my husband once said of her, "I don't know where her future is going to take her, but wherever she goes, we'll be right behind her." As we follow her, we are pleased to share her leadership with the nation, but we are proud to claim her as our own. Congresswoman Barbara Jordan.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you, all of you. And thank you, Lady Bird Johnson, for an introduction of which I am worthy. That was very nice, Lady Bird, and you will remain my first lady, just as your husband remains my first man in my heart. To all of the first ladies, thank you for coming to Houston. I want all of you to know, and especially Congresswomen Holtzman and Heckler, you are in my district. Right now. The mayor welcomed you, but I will welcome you to the best represented district in the country. Now, I'm going to be brief. If we are to believe what we read in Harper's Magazine, Harper's Bazaar, 33 1/3% of the most powerful women in America are before you right now. If you read Proverbs, the 31st chapter, it begins a litany of praise for the worthy woman. It begins this way. Who can find a virtuous woman for her price is far above rubies? From virtue to power. What we are about here now will require no small amount of virtue and a great deal of power. The value of women, mostly in a narrowly construed fashion, has been recognized throughout the ages. But the value of women has been periodically re-evaluated and sometimes devaluated. American history is peppered with efforts by women to be recognized as human beings and as citizens and to be included in the whole of our national life. This conference is one more effort on the part of women for total recognition and total inclusion. The success or failure of this conference is our responsibility. And we should not waste one moment trying to find scapegoats. If this conference succeeds, there will be ample accolades for everybody. And if it fails, all of you may look into your mirror and identify a contributing culprit. Nothing stated in the goals of this conference are incompatible with the goals of America. As a matter of fact, the goals of this conference, as a matter of fact, sound like stanzas to America the Beautiful. You have several of the goals written in your programs. Recognize the contribution of women to the development of our country. Assess the progress which has been made to date by both the public and the private sectors in promoting equality between men and women in all aspects of life in America, assess the role of women in religious, social, cultural, economic life. The goals are there. They are non-controversial. But I would remind you that when those goals were written into the authorizing legislation for this conference, there was controversy. A two-thirds majority vote in the House of Representatives was not possible, and so the legislation was approved by simple majority. Those goals of this conference are as laudable and reasonable to me as the goals President Carter talks about of human rights in America's foreign policy. If Americans were asked to differentiate or distinguish between what characterizes other countries and what characterizes us, we would say our high regard for the individual. That is the thing which makes us different. We endorse personal and political freedom as a natural right of humankind. Human rights are more than abstractions, particularly when they are limited or non-existent. Human rights apply equally to Soviet dissidents, Chilean peasants, and American women. Women are human. We are united on that. When our rights are limited, when our rights are violated, we need a domestic human rights program. This conference could be the beginning of such an effort which would be enhanced if we would not allow ourselves to be brainwashed by people who predict chaos for us and failure for us. Tell them they lie and move on. Implicit in being free to be you and me, implicit in that is the recognition of the diverse opinion represented here. We must not impose on others what we would not have imposed on ourselves. This conference is inclusive. Everybody is here, and everyone must be free to define the meaning of total woman for himself. The differences among us at this conference cannot and should not be ignored. They are racial, the differences, economic, cultural, social, political, ideological. The differences are there. The delegates to this conference are a priori not of a single mind. We should not be of a single mind. No one person, and no subgroup at this conference has the right answer. Yes.
Wonder Woman is not a delegate here. The Bionic Woman is not here either. American representatives are here to try to work through the problems of this conference. Of course we will debate, of course we will differ. We will plead and placate. We will make points of order and overrule points of order. We will persuade and dissuade. And when the debate becomes heated, I hope you will remember Lyndon Johnson's invocation of Isaiah's invocation. Come now, let us reason together. And this statement was made by Hubert Humphrey recently on the floor of the United States Senate, and he was talking about the Senate when he said, "There are no problems between the different points of view in this body that cannot be reconciled if we are willing to give a little and share a little." Do that. We can't expect it all to be our way. At a time when this country is drifting, if it is not shifting to the right, civil rights and affirmative action efforts are lagging. Intra-women's movement rancor has no place. Intra-women's movement rancor must be displaced by interdependence, and mutual respect. That has to happen. This is a time for foot soldiers, not kamikaze pilots. Perhaps this is the most important conference to be held since Seneca Falls. What occurs here and what does not occur here can make a difference in our personal and collective lives. The legislation which authorized this conference mandated a course of future action. 120 days after we finish here, a report is to be submitted to each house of the Congress. What will you have in it? 120 days after that, President Carter is to submit recommendations to each house of the Congress based on the report which emanates from this body. What will he recommend? 8 months from the time we leave here, something is supposed to happen. Recommendations will be submitted, but I have no doubt that legislation which emanates from this conference as the source, however embryonically, will have a better chance of passage if support for that recommendation is widespread. The Congress approved $5 million for this conference, but if we do nothing here productive, constructive, or healing, we will have wasted much more than money. We will have wasted, lost, negated an opportunity to do something for ourselves and for generations which are not here. Not making a difference is a cost we cannot afford. The cause the cause of equal and human rights will reap what is sown. November 18 through November 21, 1977. What will you reap? What will you sow?
Continue that vision by appointing a Citizens Advisory Council by executive order to assure the continued advancement of the status of women. He said in 1966, and I quote, "The time has come for the American woman to take her rightful place in American society." January 1975, former President Gerald Ford issued an executive order establishing a national commission on the observance of International Women's Year. In April 1977, President James Earl Carter reappointed the commission to continue the work to organize and implement the state meetings and this national conference. It is now November 19, 1977. And that conference is a reality. We live in a time where the rate and quantity of change continue to combine so as to produce a formidable combination. Increasingly, there is the request and the demand for the enactment of laws and for changes in societal mores which address the true realization of a pluralistic culture in which variables that describe and define individuals have fundamental equal status. We are in passage, and our fates are inextricably bound together. The aim is the fostering of the well-being of people, not of women alone or of men apart, but a society of diverse talents. As we approach this delegate assembly, we will deliberate across variables which will tend to isolate, stereotypes which will tend to separate, yet we will all share the same experiences. Let us keep ever before us the concept that the unexamined issue is not worth holding on to forever. As our country has just celebrated its bicentennial, and are celebrating the bicentennial of our Constitution, it is appropriate that we now focus nationwide and worldwide attention on a most important resource that has helped to make America great and to keep it great from the time of its founding, the American woman. In 23 short years from now, at the turn of the century, by the year 2000, most of us in this room today will be beyond 50. It is important that the decisions that we make today and tomorrow and Monday are tempered by our full knowledge that their impact will have influence on generations to come after us, yet unborn. It is against this background that we assemble this weekend. It is in the true spirit of American democracy that we have come together to debate issues and not people. It is a sobering experience to preside over this opening ceremony of the most significant and far-reaching event in this century. This National Women's Conference of American Women on the move.